College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Super Bowl is almost upon us, and history could be made if the Chiefs can win a three-peat. We're asking you, who's feeling more pressure? Is it Mahomes or Jalen Hurts? Because Mahomes wants to make history, and Jalen Hurts, you don't want to be two of the three losses of the three-peat.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, though. If you look at big history, Jalen Hurts being linked to Patrick Mahomes is not a bad thing.
Yeah, but on the wrong end, let's get the thoughts of, one of our favorites, longtime friend, personally and friend.
And friend of the show. Of
course, he is a multi-time National Sports Writer of the Year and one of the preeminent NFL writers that we've ever seen. It's the one and only Peter King, now part of the Let's Go podcast with Jim Gray. Peter, thanks for the time. How are you?
Maggie and Andrew, great to be with you. How are you?
We're doing great. You told me what? This is 40 years you've never watched a Super Bowl on TV, and this will be the first time you're watching from your couch.
Yeah, it'll be the first time since... I think Super Bowl 17. I'm 67 years old. This will be the first time since I was 26, and we had a 5-month-old daughter in Cincinnati. It's the first time I will have watched it at home, and yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, quite honestly, because everybody always says, "Hey, man, did you see the commercials?" What? What are you talking about? Hey, did you see this? You see that? No, I'm in the press box at the game. I'm not watching the game on TV. So I'm really kind of looking forward to it and seeing what the extravaganza is like.
I had a memory of you in New Orleans. You probably might not remember. There was Hall of Fame voting Saturday. You happened to see me right outside, and you're just like, "Andrew, I need a huge favor. Can you run to my room? I left my cell phone there," or something to that effect. And of course, it was Saturday, so I was free. Do you miss the atmosphere of being around all your coworkers and the New Orleans? I know you've done many New Orleans games. All the fans, what about the vibes and the atmosphere of the Super Bowl?
You know, what I really miss is, 10 times over the years, I was the pool reporter for one of the teams at the Super Bowl. And what that means for people who don't know is you go to practice every day and you have sort of a sanitized version of what happened at practice. You know, last year I was at Chiefs practice and I saw Patrick Mahomes, on the Friday at practice, have an absolutely phenomenal practice. And look, I'll just make this point about the Super Bowl. Of course, it's always fun to be there. And over the years, I really enjoyed it. But really, you're so separated from actual football for 6 days before the game. And that's one of the reasons why I always like to do the pool reporting, because for 2 to 3 hours every day, you are actually touching the product. You're actually seeing what's going on there, and you're seeing, last year you're seeing Travis Kelce walk up and down the sidelines as intense as if it were a game. You're seeing things that other people can't see and that really make you feel like you're at a football game. And yeah, obviously I miss friends. Last night, Mike Silver, Jenny Varentis, Kalen Kaler, and Albert Breer took a photo and sent it to me. And when I woke up this morning, they were saying, "Hi, Peter." And that was cool. But then I looked at the timestamp, 11:27 p.m. I was already asleep for 2.5 hours by then. So anyway, I'm glad I'm where I am, and life is where it should be.
Well, we're happy about that. But of course, we do miss you down here. We were talking. I said, "You're going to buy a last minute ticket and fly down here, aren't you?" And you assured me, "No, I'm not going to." But Peter, I think what our audience would love to hear from you is, because you covered his career from pillar to post, Tom Brady, and the comparisons to Mahomes, if Mahomes can complete this three-peat, do you think it puts him on the level of Brady, ahead, still chasing? Where do you see that?
Well, Maggie, I guess I would answer it in this way. You know, Tom Brady, by the age of 30, was 12-2 in playoff games with two championships and a passer rating of about 86. Patrick Mahomes, even before Sunday, is 17-3 with a passer rating of, I don't know, about 103 in the postseason and three championships. He's reached the championship game of his conference all 7 years that he has played professional football. He's done something that you'd have to go back to Otto Graham in the 40s and 50s. And to see anybody like that who has been as accomplished by the age of 30. But obviously, it's not about what happens by the age of 30. It's what happens in an entire career. And Tom Brady was absolutely fantastic because he won so many of his titles. I think he won four of his titles after turning 37. So, you know, that standing the test of time is going to be the challenge for Patrick Mahomes. But look, he's the most accomplished quarterback, whether he wins Sunday or not, in the modern era of football since 1960. He's the most accomplished football quarterback of anybody ever by the age of 30. And we'll see if he can continue that.
Peter, we were having a debate before. Would Patrick Mahomes have had this level of success with another coach at another team? Or is this more of an Andy Reid-Patrick Mahomes partnership?
I think it's absolutely a partnership. There's a reason why Patrick Mahomes, you know, before the 2017 draft, was absolutely fixated on going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Of all the teams he could have gone to, that is the one team in the NFL. His agent told Brett Veach, the GM, that, you know, make it happen. You know, we'd love to end up in Kansas City, all that. And I think the biggest reason is now you see it. I think one of the great things about Andy Reid that puts him up with the greatest coaches of all time is that every single game you watch, and he'll call something that you've never seen him call before. He'll have a formation you've never seen before. Against the Buffalo Bills, for the first time all year, twice, he had a formation with two tight ends as sidecars to Patrick Mahomes. And on both plays, Kansas City scored touchdowns, once on a Kareem Hunt run and once on a Patrick Mahomes, you know, design run around right end. And I mean, you see that all the time. Every game you see it. And I've texted, and as a matter of fact, I texted him before the Buffalo game, and I just said, man, I can't wait to see what I've never seen before. Because you go back to Corn Dog, those plays 2 years ago with Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore, the jet motion coming inside and then going out, and you say, well, where did those come from? And so that is what is so great about Andy Reid, and why I'm sure Patrick Mahomes thanks his lucky stars for having him as his coach and play designer.
Peter, you're texting Andy Reid, basically daring him to do things he's never done right before he plays my Buffalo Bills. What kind of friend are you? Like they needed that. Okay, yeah. So on the flip side of this, obviously Andy Reid is a legend, and Steve Spagnuolo, I think, deserves to go in the Hall of Fame as a coordinator. What he's done, just even going back to the Giants days, was stopping with Tom. But Tom Brady. Here's the other thing, though, about Nick Sirianni. It's funny because the other coach, Peter, I thought was going to be the first coach fired this year. And everyone kind of asked, like, what do you do around here? We're not even really sure what his, you know, he's not really, I don't think, thought of that highly outside of the building. Is there a comp for Nick Sirianni through history of someone who maybe we either underestimated, didn't give enough credit to as a coach?
That's a really, really good question. I think, as I process that and think of somebody. I'll just tell you the one thing that I think about Nick Sirianni this year. I think a lot of times your players can really help you form your identity. And when Nick Sirianni's players saw that he was, to put it mildly, embattled, both coming out of last season and then early this season. And, you know, why did it take the Eagles so long to, at the end of last season, to confirm absolutely that Sirianni was going to be back? You have to think that Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie were considering, you know, after the collapse last year, do we have the right guy for the job? And so anyway, they obviously, after watching what's happened this year and watching how seamlessly Saquon Barkley has come into this offense and watching how the quarterback has played better down the stretch, you know, I think that to me says that the coach has a really good hold on his team. And as far as coaches go, I think the one guy, and I'm not saying that this is exactly the same, because it certainly isn't exactly the same, but I will look back at a guy who coached a long time ago, just sort of when I got in the game, who was kind of embattled, Sam Weich of the Bengals, who was embattled both in Cincinnati and Tampa Bay, did things his way, and really basically said, I am going to handle this team the way I think is best to handle it. Had an explosive offense. I don't know. I'm not saying that they're similar, but I'm saying that he reminds me, what's happening in Philadelphia reminds me a little bit. That's the first team I ever covered in the NFL, mm-hmm. and it sort of reminds me how the storm on the outside is different than what's happening inside.
Peter, this week is Hall of Fame week as well, Super Bowl week. Big name. We're in New Orleans. Obviously, the Mannings are everywhere. What's your opinion on Eli Manning's Hall of Fame candidacy?
My opinion is I'd be surprised if he got in this year. First of all, I think there's some tremendous first year and early competitors among the modern era candidates. I think Marshall Yanda's got a fantastic case. Terrell Suggs, Adam Vinatieri, he's going to get in the Hall of Fame one day, whether it's this year or another year. So I think that part of it is hard. I am not in any way, I don't subscribe to the theory that, oh, you know, it really should take a lot more. You ought to be a real superstar in history to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. I could give a crap whether a guy gets in on the first ballot, second, third, fourth, whatever. It doesn't matter. The job of a Hall of Fame voter, and I am not one anymore, but the job of a Hall of Fame voter is to select the best players or the best coaches, whoever it is, that year, regardless of whether it's his first year, you know, eligible for the Hall, or 15th year eligible for the Hall. And look, I'm not involved in it. I don't know what is going to happen, but there seems to be a lot of noise out there that even though Eli had the two superior years, that his candidacy is kind of marred by the fact that that's it, you know, in terms of making great noise in the playoffs. He had 2 years. Now, you beat the great Belichick and the great Brady twice. That says a lot to me. In my opinion, he is a Hall of Famer. I mean, I don't see him getting in this year with the competition he has. If I could say one other thing about the Hall, look, you know, one of the things that really chafed on me as I got older in this job is how much criticism the voters get. And look, we deserve to be put under a microscope. I get it. I always, always explained who I voted for and why, because I think we owe that to the public. But I also think that the orchestrated campaigns and the social media stuff that goes on now criticizing the Hall of Fame voters and the vote itself is, you know, has just gotten really crazy. And it's one of the reasons why, believe me, I was not at all unhappy to resign, you know, as a voter when I retired. I should, in my opinion, if you're not in it every day, just let somebody else do it. I did it for 33 years. It's time for people to hear another voice, but it kind of wore on you at the end.
You know, that's not just for football, by the way. It felt like there was, I don't want to say a witch hunt to try to find the one person who didn't vote for Ichiro to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. It's like, let's find this person and, like, basically, you know, put him in the town square. Peter King is joining us. Just another minute with you, Peter. And you mentioned about the outside criticism. The referees, when it comes to the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, there's a lot of questions. I know Roger Goodell came out, you know, and called it ridiculous that there's any kind of bias towards the Chiefs. I'm curious now that you've had you're like a year kind of removed from doing this every single day in your first year of air quotes retirement, even though you're on the Let's Go pod and I'm sure you're watching every second. Do you think that the Chiefs have enjoyed even a bit of a home field, you know, home cooking bias, or do you think this story is also ridiculous?
I don't think the story is ridiculous. I think it's way overdone. But then again, everything in the media about the NFL is way overdone. So join the club. I just know this, Maggie, that if you were going to start talking about bad calls or calls that, quote, favor a team, end quote, you better be prepared to know that I want to analyze all the calls. Let's look at every call, both for and against Kansas City in the game. Let's look at they're on what are they on? Like a 9-0 playoff run or whatever it is. Let's look at every call in those games that was flagged. Okay. And let's say, was that a penalty? Was that a penalty? People can look at these and look, we all saw the two calls against Houston that were lousy calls. We saw it. They were not valid fouls. But for that then to rise to the level, again, I would have to go back and look at that entire game. And obviously those were two big, the first one was a huge call. I would have to go back and look at the entire game to see, did Houston get a couple of calls that game? I don't know. Because everybody is so laser focused on Kansas City getting the advantage and getting the edge. And look, as far as the Josh Allen call, people on 4th-and-1, people have to remember one thing about that, okay? If it's called one way on the field, you have to have absolute proof. The rules say you have to have absolute proof that the call was wrong on the field in order to change it. I've seen a lot of replays. And I've never seen absolute proof that he made the first down. Now, maybe he did, but if you're going to change a call, you better have absolute incontrovertible evidence that the call on the field was wrong.
Peter, I'll point you to some scientists in Buffalo who may I'm just kidding. Peter, I'm curious, what are you guys eating for your first Super Bowl at home? You and your lovely wife, Ann, are going to be watching the Super Bowl. First time since Super Bowl 17 you're watching on TV. By the way, you're going to be a little disappointed by the commercials. I just don't set the bar too high, okay? Like, have a realistic view. Any snacks? Like, what's the...
Well, we are going to have some snacks. And as a matter of fact, Ann's feeling a little bit of pressure to have good snacks because we're not, you know, we don't put 8 pounds of nacho cheese over our chips or anything like that. It's just not, I don't know. We don't love that kind of a snack. So I'm sure we'll have some snacks. I just hope that we also have a couple of cold beers.
And, there you go.
I think it'll be a lot of fun.
The Allagash Whites, Peter. I was reading those columns every week. Thank you so much for the time and enjoy it. And thank you for doing this.
Yep. You're welcome, guys. Have a great week in New Orleans.
Appreciate it. Listen to Peter on the Let's Go podcast. Does a great job. Jim Gray and Brady, Larry Fitzgerald. Just fantastic stuff. Okay, we'll react to that in just a moment. But first, we have this. Welcome back to the Maggie and Perloff Show. We're so pleased to have one of our great friends grace us on the set. And it's funny because, Ryan, I always want to introduce you as former NFL quarterback Ryan Leaf. But you are so beyond that with the great work that you're doing with the Menninger Clinic and also with Last Mile Radio on Sirius XM. Like, how much of your identity is still quarterback versus now a man who went through recovery and is helping other people try to get their life figured out?
You know, I think for a lot of people, it's still probably rooted in football.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's just how it's going to be, especially when you spend time around this. And then I just went on like the analytics, one of the analytics show with Lindsay Rhodes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
30-13. Yeah.
And it was, and we got to bring up the 4th-and-5 play by the Bills there and really kind of go through it. That was so much fun being able to kind of just, you know, football's never going to go away for me. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind it. It allows me to have a lot of fun around football. But those two things you talked about, the Menninger Clinic and the Last Mile Radio, I mean, that is incredibly purposeful work because it's having real, purposeful change in other people's lives.
You know, it's funny. There was an allegation, or there was like an anonymous report wondering if Shedeur Sanders, the draft prospect, quote unquote, loved football. And you hear that almost every draft. Does this guy love football? I'm curious, did Ryan Leaf, during the draft, did you love football? And is that a real thing? Like, do you look at prospects, or is that just something that, like, anonymous scouts say? Is it really a thing? Do you want your players to love football?
Of course. I mean, what I would love to hear is, do you love to compete?
Okay.
That's like because if you're willing to compete at anything, you know, it doesn't matter. Do you like to compete? Are you in a situation where all of a sudden you're playing on Sundays or you're in practice and your guy doesn't want to compete? That's the bigger thing for me. Because you can love a lot of things, but if you love competition, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You're gonna want to compete at it.
But I'm going to play counter. I know you're a very competitive person. You know, so what, you look back at what happened with you who drafted, did you love to compete at that time? Did you love football at that time?
Yeah, I love to compete.
Yeah.
I wish.
Yeah, you're so competitive.
I wish the Senior Bowl allowed underclassmen. I mean, because could you imagine Peyton and I playing in the Senior Bowl against each other? How they could have marketed that? Like, what were you guys doing back then? Like, this is the perfect opportunity before the draft, before anything, to have the two guys that were going to be drafted first and second actually compete before. That would have been really fun. And I look back on it and some of the, I guess, information that I was fed from my agents and people, things like that. The fact that I didn't compete at the combine makes me angry. It was a waste of time because we didn't do anything. Neither Peyton and I did. We waited till our pro day, which was great because I had my wide receivers, so there was continuity there. But I really wish I would have, because I love to compete. So any opportunity for me to show you that I was a better football player than anybody of you out there, I wanted to take that. Yeah,
Ryan, you do so much work with college football players and pro players, but also in college. You go around the country, you talk to all of these teams about, you know, dangers, pitfalls, things to stay away from, but also, like, you're seeing a different athlete now, you know, with NIL and just how much the college game has been professionalized and in a real way. Do you notice there's a different type of stress that these college football players are under because of the money?
Well, I don't think there's much stress now with the money.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's maybe easier.
Well, I think that's a variable that was unquantified. I thought there was two really variables for scouts and for everybody preparing for players for the draft. What would life-changing money do to you in terms of your work ethic and things like that? You couldn't quantify that. I mean, hell, I bounced a check for $13 to Pizza Hut the week before the draft. So, like, I mean, you had no idea what life-changing money was going to do to me.
Yeah.
But you do now. You do know that. I think the scouts are really going to have, an advantage knowing one of those now as they can quantify that with their grades, with their numbers on, well, you know, when so-and-so got this much money, you know, he wasn't in the film room as much. Right? He wasn't around the facility as much. You know, when a guy is being paid that kind of money in college and the dude doesn't change and he's there like crazy. And that's the stuff I heard about Shedeur. Guy's driving around in a $300,000 Lamborghini or something in Boulder, and yet he's the first guy in there at 6 a.m. He's watching film. He's in the weight room. I'm like, things don't change once you have a mindset like I'm a football player, the football player is the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. So everything I do has to benefit the foundation of building that up. And those are just things I didn't understand. And when you haven't had money, and I think this can go a long way of teaching these guys this earlier so they don't make the same mistakes maybe when they get to the NFL.
You were just at the Senior Bowl. You spoke to players there. You're in the room with them. Who stood out to you among this class?
Jalen Milroe. He's an Alabama quarterback. I think there was a lot of expectation. After he heard me talk, he came up and we talked about, you know, some of the things around, you know, not allowing other people to, you know, set expectations for you, you know, but rather you and the what you're trying to accomplish and understand. And that was great to hear, you know, for somebody who I think a lot of people are a little hesitant about because, you know, he's more of an athletic quarterback. He's big, physical. He's a leader and all those things. But there were times last year that I think a lot of people in Alabama thought that he probably should have been sat down, you know, and Kalen DeBoer needed to move on. And, you know, instead they lost four games. And, you know, in that part of the country, you could lose your job for losing four games, you know, and that's a big deal. So I really liked him.
Ryan Leaf is joining us for a few more minutes. Justin Herbert, I know you're close with him. We're on in Oregon. You got a lot of big Justin Herbert fans. And forgive me, Oregon, but you know, tough way to lose in the playoffs. Yes. I know this was heartbreaking, but what advice would you have for Herbert for this offseason? Because it feels like it's so close to clicking, it just hasn't yet.
I mean, I didn't see it coming. You know, I thought them getting the 5 seed was an absolute shoo-in to the divisional round, and Houston just played their best football game of the year. Big mistakes offensively. I think what it was is they just weren't able to capitalize on some early opportunities that would have got them in the end zone, and I think that game turns out much differently. But they had to settle for field goals, made mistakes. Justin made some plays that he hadn't made all year long in terms of turnovers. I mean, he only had 3 interceptions coming into that playoff game, and I think he ended up with more in the game than he did the entire season. So it's also the first year under Jim Harbaugh going to the playoffs. So sometimes you need failure. You need to experience failure so that you can do it better the next time. And so I would suspect he goes back to the lab. You know, he does great off-season work. He gets healthy again, and then he works on his fundamentals. He's got a great coach. And then I just think they got to add. You know, they got to add pieces. I think the offensive line, for as much as they built up, was a real problem last year. Like, they let Justin get crushed a bunch.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be the case for how much they've invested in first-round picks on the protection of that. You know, that those draft picks could have gone somewhere else. What's the defensive line look like? You know, Bosa and Mack are getting older. I think they got to be a little bit better on the back end outside of Derwin James. But I think they're, like you said, I think they're really, really close.
Tell me about Last Mile Radio. Who have you talked to, and what's the theme of it?
Well, so it's a foundation that was built about 15 years ago with a couple out of Silicon Valley. They were venture capitalists, and they just started going into prisons trying to see if they could put down, like build some businesses out of, you know, justice-impacted people who are getting out, like to give them an opportunity. And it's morphed into something different. Their educational programming now around, they teach them coding. Learn how to code while they're in there, and then audio, visual, and video production. So these are like applicable skills for when they get out, if somebody doesn't want to give them a job because there's a convicted felon or something like that they can actually go do it on their own. And that's a big thing, because there's that what's lost in a lot of this is you walk out and there's just no hope. You think, and that's why the recidivism rate is so huge. And so these programs now, and I think over 13 states and like 15 or 17 facilities all over the country now. And SiriusXM really liked the project, and they started a radio show around it, and I was made the host about 6 months ago. And some of the stories I've been able to tell of individuals, I was in San Quentin Penitentiary just 2 weeks ago. And that's where California's death row was forever. It's the oldest prison in California, and it's really changing. They are trying to, they've added rehabilitation center to the name of San Quentin Penitentiary and Rehabilitative Center. And that alone just like defeats stigma. It starts the verbiage of people thinking differently and noticing. 95% of the people that are currently incarcerated are going to get out in this country, 95% of them. So wouldn't you want to give them the best chance to build your community up rather than to victimize it when they get out? And so that's what this program is. And then the opportunities that I get to do, go into these prisons to talk to people, to tell their stories.
Ryan Leaf, you can hear him, Last Mile Radio on SiriusXM, and the great work you do with the Menninger Clinic. Ryan, you're an inspiration. You hear that a lot, but we mean it. Thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. It's always awesome to see you.
Let's get to Andrew Bogish now, who's got headlines. What's going on in the world, Bogues?
Guys, if you weren't here back in hour one, Bronny James hit his first NBA three-pointer last night, playing the final 6 minutes of the Lakers' 122-97 rout of the Clippers in their new building. In other father-son news, Marcus Jordan is facing DUI and cocaine possession charges after driving his Lamborghini onto train tracks in Florida very early yesterday morning. Not surprisingly, and maybe as he should, Marcus dropped his dad's name to responding officers.
I'm Marcus Jordan. I'm Michael Jordan's son. Okay. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm just trying to get home. And I made a wrong turn. Okay. And clearly, we would just like to get our car off of the train tracks.
Marcus.
It became personal with me.
Was.
Does that happen? Can you take a wrong turn and end up on train tracks? Has that ever happened in the history of anyone?
I'll give him this, Maggie. I think you can take a wrong turn, end up on train tracks. You can't end up as far down the train tracks as Marcus Jordan did.
He was like in the middle of the woods, it looked like. I couldn't even tell it was train tracks until they got closer. Yeah, but this is the body cam footage that came from the police. So he's in this fancy blue car, obviously. He's Michael Jordan's son. And he's like, yeah, you know, it's the darndest thing. Like, we were on our way to the 7-Eleven, and these train tracks just appeared out of nowhere.
Just trying to get home, Maggie.
Yeah, it's like, okay, it's funny. Thankfully, no one was hurt.
Right.
Because if he was driving impaired or whatever, we don't know if he was. He says he wasn't, but he had the cocaine in the car and whatever. But allegedly, no one got hurt. I actually think this is the appropriate use of, do you have any idea who my father is? That's the most obnoxious. It's the most obnoxious thing that anyone can say in the world. Do you have any idea who my father is? But if I've just driven a quarter of a mile on some train tracks with my Lamborghini and I got three cops there and I'm in the middle of it was pitch black. I'm dropping the I'm Michael Jordan's son.
I know.
I had no problem with it.
Yep. I know Scottie Pippen. What can I get you guys? Anything you need.
Yeah, would you like some shoes? Yeah. I know Larsa. I know.
Actually, I wouldn't drop the Larsa thing. I would, depending where you are, I don't think that went over well.
Yeah, maybe not. A lot of people took her side. But still, I think you should not drop that when you like, you know, table reservation. I don't love it when it gets, you know, kids into college. The nepotism stuff gets you things you don't deserve. But I'll tell you, if there's three cops around me and I'm in big, big, deep doo-doo, I'm definitely going, like, I'm Michael Jordan's third cousin twice removed. We had dinner once when I was 12. Does that do anything for
you? Well, what if you're in this situation, and thank God you're not, and you never would be, what name would you try to
drop? I don't know. Those train tracks just pop up on you.
Drive my Lamborghini. What would you try? What would you figure out? Oh, my God.
Do you know McLovin?
McLovin. Yeah. Hopefully you get the cops that pulled over McLovin.
Oh, no. I know what you could use. You could use, used to be at the New York station. Do you know? Did you listen to me? A New Jersey cop? They love that.
Be like, no, I'd have to do the opposite. Do you know Mike Francesa? Well, I replaced him, and then he replaced me right back. Can I offer you that? Maybe Boomer. I don't know. Boomer.
Tiki.
I think Tiki would help. I know Gary V, but that's like you gotta
have a cop.
I don't know. Maybe they're into like motivational speaking.
Oh yeah, of course.
I'll ask Trooper Mike's around here somewhere.
Wait, is this the same Michael Jordan who used to own the Bobcats?
Yes, right. That guy.
Oh, okay. Now I understand. Yeah, now I know who you're talking about.
He played before he was an owner.
Oh, did he really? Was he really good?
He's pretty
young
good,
Manny.
No better than LeBron, I imagine.
I am just, I'm, this is embarrassing for Marcus. He's had a couple gaffes lately, and thankfully no one was hurt. No problem dropping the, do you know who my father is? Who would you drop? What name would you drop if you were in this pickle, DP?
Dan Patrick. Yeah. In fact, I think you should drop his name, too.
I met Dan once.
Yeah. Do you remember the Dan Patrick show?
Yeah. It's like my co-host was his right-hand man.
Yeah. Wow. Andrew, there's got to be someone better.
See this Anthony
Edwards Sandler.
Most amazing thing I ever saw.
Farrell or Sandler. But
you could drop Will Farrell or Adam Sandler. That's getting you out of jail.
But it's not like I talk to those guys. That'd be a totally made-up thing.
You're
Sandler.
Movie.
Everybody loves Sandler. That's 100% approval.
You could say, did you see Hustle? I'm reporter number two. Bo Cruz.
But everybody was, they might be reporter number one fans.
No, Anthony Gargano? What a hack. No, I'm just kidding.
My barber only knows you as the reporter from the movie. Like, yeah. when I showed him the show, he was like, oh, I know him. He's an actor, right? I was like, an actor? I was like, oh, he wasn't Hustle.
Wow, that guy that really knows the movie Hustle.
I guess he does.
He's that guy from That Thing.
Bo Cruz, how's it feel getting into the combine?
Bo Cruz.
Yeah, you'd have to drop Sandler.
Yeah.
I mean, DP or Sandler, that's pretty good. You're getting out of jail.
Yeah,
Am I getting out of jail?
Those are high approval ratings. Yeah, you could drop those names, too. We got to do better than this. We know somebody. Do you know any politicians or anybody influential or powerful?
That's dicey. In this day and age, in these divided times, who are you going to drop? Which name? That could land you in jail even faster.
Yeah, that's a good point.
On both sides.
Good point.
All right. Well, anyone else got anything better than Sandler?
Yeah. Anybody in the room have a good name drop?
In case you need to get out of jail, what celebrity could you drop?
I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing better than Sandler.
Oh, you know what? I got it. I went to the same high school as Kobe Bryant.
There you go.
But that is always that's like the third thing I tell people about me.
You played against Kobe.
Played against Kobe. My brother was on a team with Kobe.
In Philadelphia, if you're not in Philly or LA, is that going to work for you?
Oh, my God. He's more popular. He's not that popular in Philly anymore. They turned on Kobe.
Well, I went to the same high school as Joe Torre, only about 50 years after.
Torre was there. Yeah. Loose connection.
Don't know if that's helping me.
That's not bad with the cops.
I get Henry Heimlich. Henry Heimlich.
Bogus, you got some famous people from your high school.
Mike Breen.
Well, Mike Breen went to my college. Dr. Fauci went to my high school. Would that go over well? University? No?
Dicey.
Okay. Moving on.
They might find you in the woods months later.
Second time, Aaron
Rodgers will have you just up in his basement somewhere, waterboarding you, being like, so what do you actually know?
That's the second time this week you almost made me spit out my coffee, Bogus.
Yes, the first time was when you said Hunter Dickinson dropped 30 points in front of his grandkids.
Yeah.
He's been at Kansas for a decade. All right, folks, thanks so much. Lots more to do here, including more of our guests from Radio Row here in New Orleans. And a big question that we have for a guy who's on the trade block, the odds-on favorite to land this star. We'll tell you where he's going next. It's M&P. Maggie and Perloff on Super Bowl Radio Row is sponsored by Tide Pods. Turn to cold water washing with Tide Pods. When you switch from hot to cold, you could save up to $150 a year on your energy bill. Plus, Tide cleans great in cold. Told you guys yesterday, I wash everything in cold, and I don't wash darks and lights separately. I wash them together. And if you wash them in cold with Tide Pods, everything's perfect. Okay, so a couple things. We need to react to our interview with Peter King quickly, and then we'll get to some odds. Who's the odds-on favorite to land Myles Garrett and also Cooper Kupp, two guys who are in trade rumors now. Peter King said a couple interesting things when he joined us at the top of the hour, as he always does. One, though, was a question you asked him about the Hall of Fame and Eli Manning.
Does he think Eli's going to get in, basically? I was shocked. Peter said he doesn't think he's going to be first ballot. I don't know why. I thought this was a fait accompli that Eli was going to get in. Obviously, two Super Bowl rings is his defining Hall of Fame characteristic. I kind of thought America had settled on, and the NFL Nation had settled on, the fact that Eli was a Hall of Famer, even if a lot of us don't think he was a great regular season player. Guy's got two rings.
Yeah, literally a .500 record throughout his regular season career. And he also never won a playoff game outside of the two runs, epic runs, to win Super Bowls. He had this longest start streak that was active until the Giants pulled the plug on that when they went to Geno Smith because they eventually wanted to go to Davis Webb, I think. I'm remembering that now. But
as a coach or a player?
What's that? Oh, yeah,
no, Davis Webb is now a hot coach, but
of course, backup quarterbacks, man, just following the formula. But you know, Eli has a lot going for him. But I'm going to be honest; I don't think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I do think that matters. Peter said he doesn't care if you're first ballot, if you get in your last year of eligibility. To me, I think the players care about that, and I think there should be a distinction between first ballot and not, because you know, Deion Sanders has talked about the inner circle of the inner circle of Hall of Famers. I think the players almost feel pride in that distinction. I was a first ballot Hall of Famer, and you know, even CeCe Sabathia this year with the Baseball Hall of Fame, that was his first tweet out, first ballot Hall of Famer. Didn't have to beg for it, didn't have to wait around, and I think Eli is not a first ballot.
Well, yeah, one thing I disagreed with a little, Peter, but he might be more well-versed on this. He said there's some strong candidates, and he mentioned Marshall Yanda of the Ravens.
And like, Terrell Suggs.
Well, did he say Suggs? I know he said.
And Suggs, yeah.
He said Jan. Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't see that as a no-brainer. I think, obviously, Marshall Yanda was a great player.
Well,
he might have to wait. Yeah, but, I mean, like, it's not that great of a class. So I'm not sure that Eli is going against a lot of behemoths. I think this is the finalists. Eric Allen, Jared Allen, Willie Anderson, Jari Evans, the tackle, actually the guard for the Saints. Antonio Gates, complicated.
Yeah.
He's a PEDs.
PEDs.
Torrey Holt, Keekly.
High peak, but not a long career with Keekly.
I think Keekly seems... Oh, I thought that's another one. I'm like, oh, Keekly's a Hall of Famer.
No, I think he is, but again, it wasn't the longevity. It was just the high peak.
Eli, Steve Smith Sr., he's a good player. Terrell Suggs, Fred Taylor, Vinatieri, Wayne, Darren Woodson, and Marshall Yanda. It's a good class, but not an overwhelming class.
Well, you still have guys held from years past, or no? This is all who they're picking from.
I believe...
That's just the finalists. You're right. That's the finalists.
Right. That's what I was wondering, the same thing. So Eli's, I'm reading this article. Of course, Eli's a headliner on that list of finalists. I think Eli's fame and the post-career success plays into this. We know that's how it works.
You know, Bob Custer's in our chat, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet. He says, why isn't two-time Super Bowl winner Jim Plunkett in the NFL Hall of Fame?
Look at Plunkett's numbers. I mean, they're outright bad. I mean, really bad. Back in an era where you could throw 8 touchdowns and 30 picks in a season. Plunkett had no success. So, yeah, and honestly, I think he should be. 2 Super Bowl rings, a big deal.
I think for 2 Super Bowl rings, both for quarterbacks and for coaches.
But also, wait, how about this argument? The fact that the Giants have fallen apart since Eli left. Maybe it was more the Giants. Maybe the reason they're 500 is because of Eli. I mean, is not because of Eli, because the franchise is kind of lost.
Okay, but what is that Eli? Was that Tom Coughlin? Because they've been searching now.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, since both of those guys, and it's hard to get over, get past when you have a great quarterback and great coach combination.
But I think it's like the Supreme Court definition of adult content. It's when you know it, when you see it, and Eli feels like a Hall of Famer to me. You're right, the numbers are not great. And I think, if we put up that poll, I'll bet you it's close to 50-50. I know there are a lot of people who agree with you that it's not a no-brainer.
I don't think so. Well, no, I think he'll get in because of his last name and because of the 2 runs. But I think first ballot should be reserved for the guys who there is no debate.
Oh, by the way, Jim Plunkett, I'm just looking up, was 72-72, exactly 500
as
well.
Same as Eli. Funny.
Yeah.
Okay, quickly, well, we don't have all the time in the world for this, but just quickly, the odds-on favorite in terms of teams to land Cooper Kupp, who knows that he's being traded from the Rams, the Steelers and the Bengals, both tied in the odds. What's a better fit?
The Bengals is juicy, assuming they lose T. Higgins. I mean, anybody who Joe Burrow's throwing to is going to be awesome.
I bet Kupp definitely wants to go to the Bengals. If I were him, I would want to go there because who's going to be the Steelers quarterback?
I have no idea.
Yeah, they have a decision to make. Is it going to be Russ, Justin Fields, or whatever's behind door number 3? I don't know.
And you could get lost in Pittsburgh's offense. They don't love to throw the ball right now.
However, you're always going to have the baseline of making the playoffs with the Steelers.
Yeah,
the Bengals, it's high variance. You know, you're in the Super Bowl one year, you're not making the playoffs the next.
Like, come on. I could catch 3 passes a game from Joe Burrow. That guy puts it right on you.
I know, but do you want to win another title?
I don't know. Joe Burrow's been to a Super Bowl a lot more recently than Mike Tomlin.
Meanwhile, odds-on favorite for Myles Garrett, according to DraftKings. First would be Cleveland. Second would be the Washington Commanders. I think it's going to be D.C. Perloff thinks he's going back to Cleveland. So that's just a little bit of what's going on outside of the Super Bowl. When we come back, so much more to do, including it's Wednesday, which means the Great Debate.